The Voice America Business Channel.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate, increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, of course, along with my colleague and friend, Roy Saunderson, and we're from Rideau's Recognition Management Institute. Roy, grateful to have you back with us today. I know you've been on the road for some time, I'm grateful for a great show like we have today.
Absolutely, and I think you know with my former career area in speech-language pathology and working with brain injury, certainly very fascinated by the impact that how we communicate has had a bearing on performance. So I think we're going to delve a lot deeper today than I've ever done.
Well, I don't disagree. I think this is a fascinating area of science. It's particularly fascinating around the idea of leadership and organizational behavior and what can neuroscience teach us about workplace behavior specifically. I'm really excited as well. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fun. Of course, our guest today is Dr. Ellen Weber. She's the CEO and president of MIDA International Brain Based Center for Renewal in Secondary and Higher Education. Dr. Weber is an author, lecturer, and columnist, and is a global leadership facilitator who teaches leadership renewal at the Bittner School of Business. Her well-respected workplace improvement program includes groundbreaking brain-powered tone tools to lead innovation and renewal. Her MBA leadership course, Lead Innovation with the Brain in Mind, impacts both online and real-time leadership development. And in addition, Dr. Weber's award-winning blog ranks her highly as an influential social media expert in the field of practical brain research that converts to doable practices that improve work in any organization. And with your permission, Dr. Weber, could we call you Ellen for this show?
At the end of the show, I hope that's the best you're calling me.
You're kind. I just am so grateful you would spend some time with us today. Thank you.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm so looking forward to it. And I'm sure that we can all learn. I look forward to what I can learn as well today as we try to mash up our brains together.
Well, you're so kind about all of this. You know, Roy and I have been fans of your work for a long time, and particularly around what you do specifically around neuroscience and talking about leadership and behavior. So could you just start by telling us a little bit about the MIDA International Brain Center? What is it that you do?
Well, thank you for asking that, just to give us a context to set ourselves.
Yeah.
I direct the MIDA International Brain Center, and what that really is a unique approach. MIDA is a caring and a challenging leadership approach to change the games from traditions that we might assume are all okay, but are keeping us in very outmoded places into trajectories forward. In order to do this moving from traditions to these trajectories forward, we might here, for example, rely not only on neuro and cognitive discoveries, but I also have 30 years of experience learning from professionals like you, Roy, and you, Max, so that I can understand learning from gurus in many global settings. I've lived in China, lived in the high Arctic, stayed in Mexico, stayed in South America, stayed in the Caribbean and Canada, Ireland, England, and other places to help shake traditions into trajectories forward using my unique and award-winning approach, MIDA. So I guess that just to make I thought maybe what we could do to look at that more realistically and relevantly would be to take one problem today and look at how MITRE might operate in your workplace through one MITRE retrofit. And that would bring in all of the some of the neurodiscoveries we used without giving us so many disparate pieces that we don't really see any way to use what we're going to be discussing to make some aha happen for all of us by tomorrow.
Well, my goodness, I don't even know where to ask, because where do we begin after that? But I do wonder, really, what are some of these traditions that people have felt like have been acceptable in the past? And you talked about early on, you talked about what the center addresses, and how do we move past those traditions that people have always accepted as the norm?
It sounds very much like you are a plant, so you could probably come on an email and charge me a dollar after for that question, because I really love the notion of, we would differ from the word kiss, for example. We say keep it smart or stupid.
Mm-hmm.
We don't keep it stupid, we keep it smarter. And but the problem that we might take a look at that we think is big, but I would like to have your input as to whether you agree this is a traditional problem, is that workplaces continually tell us we tend to work with top organizations, with the top executive leaders, and with universities, with the administrators and faculty, in order to make change happen. And we find they tell us consistently that the organization is unable to grow or change or improve. There's a variety and a myriad of reasons, we would all agree to that. But that's what they say is a problem that we think we could tackle together with you and to have some fun with today, showing what MITRE is, what it does, and why we all sit around and laugh and sip wine a little bit at the end through kind of excitement for what we get.
Well, it's interesting because we do get into these ruts, if you will, right? These beliefs that kind of trap us in ways that don't become us.
More than get into them, the brain literally is equipped to default you back to that very rut that you would like to run from most. So unless you're working with your brain and not against it, which most organizations are not, then you are defaulting daily with thousands of workers and administrators and university faculties back to the very ruts that you detest, that keep you bored, that keep you wishing you were anywhere but at work. We know that 75% to 80% of the people don't want to be there. They're disengaged. Mm-hmm. And we, of course, sense that we know one reason why, and that has to do with their brain. So the problem then we're agreed on that's an okay problem to look at for this segment is the inability of an organization to change or grow. And we would like to then talk about how MITRE and the MITRE approach using neurodiscoveries rolled into practices could retrofit that to replace one practice in the organization that we have noticed keeps people in that inability to grow space. And that is, you're going to be shocked, probably many are initially, that's your mentoring programs, which are common to almost every organization. Would you agree with me, or do you think we're stretching it too far for anybody to go with today?
I find it fascinating. I'm curious, what is it about the mentoring program that is preventing us from changing or growing?
This is already fun because it's already, the brain leaps to novelty and we're already pushing it around in some fun places. So let's set up a scenario where your mentor program has all of your experts teaching all of your novice or upstarts in exciting, comfortable, cozy new ways to learn the policies and such of the organization. You're probably already getting where I'm going with this. I'm going to redefine the word expert. I'll say X is probably the unknown in algebra, and spurt is a drip under pressure. So if your place is filled with senior executives, you choose who they are, experts, quote, unquote. If your building is filled with these, I won't say moron because Dilbert already said that, so I won't say it, but sometimes we we forget to unpack what our senior executives are lacking, and that is that we have lied to them and told them their brains were fixed IQs and that they have years. I have 30 years of experience in the change industry that I hope will never make me an expert. Because what happens is they come in with the young upstarts, the kind Dr. Robin McMaster, who's a senior VP, and I teach over in the graduate school of MBA. They're 25 years old. Thank you very much. Their brains are so synapsed and alive that if I stop being an expert and I become a fellow explorer with that young man and young woman, all of a sudden, brains are literally reconfiguring themselves within seconds to learn new innovations, to be humbled by their wisdom, to laugh with their wit, and to luckily share two bits from my own 30 years in the field of neurodiscoveries rolled into workplace practices for change. So what happens is the exciting part of changing a mentor program into what we have dubbed as a mind-guiding program is mutual mentoring needs to take place for change across the organization.
Okay, so what we're talking about now is the ability to learn regardless of position, and specifically that leaders in the past have assumed that being the expert puts them almost in an egocentric role with an inability to change or to grow.
More scary even than egocentric, because every time I come to you as a quote-unquote expert who's already proficient in most of the things of my organization, I develop in my own brain and in others new neuron pathways toward ruts, traditions, old policies, old boy club ideas, whatever those are, lacking an ability to work with diversity because I have an old-fashioned idea that if I engage others, they're going to eat a piece of my pie, as opposed to the new notion of it being an asset model where diversity can change the pie for everybody and expand it for everybody. So it's even more than ego. It's a scary place of inertia in the human brain, which creates new neuron pathways for more inertia in the silos of these traditions. It never gets me beyond the marketing department to the sales department, because the marketing department has all the answers. So does the sales department in this mentored mode or a mode of expertise that we have dubbed as okay.
Oh, wow. So this is interesting. I mean, this puts a different relation. Then when I talk about humility, I've always thought about it in a very emotional way. But from a brain science perspective, what is humility doing for us then?
Oh, wow. I once heard humility described as truth. And why I love the fact that humility is truth is that the wonderful blog that I just read again this morning on thankfulness that Roy came up with and humility, let's line them up together. They can be delightfully true or they can be very false in the human brain. If I come in and I act all humble around you, Max and Roy, I might really be looking for a position from you. I might be looking for you to invite me back and promote the book that I want to write. That actually is creating something other than what you want in a changing new era organization and moving forward with a meta message which says, I'm really thanking you, Max and Roy, but really I'm more about myself.
And
I'm hoping to get back something from you. If I give you an interview for an hour, I'm hoping that you will give me back at least two tweets on something I wrote in the last week. If that is my motive, then it looks kind of cool to you, but in reality, I'm destroying something deeper from a neural perspective in my organization, in my own brain, and in my organization.
So there's a disingenuousness to it.
Well, there is a disingenuous, which is becoming reconfigured dendrite brain cells for disingenuity. I don't know if that's a word. Disingenuity.
Wow.
Is becoming disingenuous across an organization.
Oh, wow. We have to take a quick break, but I want to get back into this mind guiding. Like, what is this about? And boy, there's so much more. So to all our listeners, stay tuned because we're going to be talking to her for this hour. It's a great conversation with Dr. Ellen Weber, and you're listening to Radoz, Real Recognition Radio. This is Max Brown and my colleague and friend Roy Saunderson on the Voice America Business Channel. Please stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Think you've seen everything there is to see in online television? Let us surprise you. Visit voiceamerica.tv today for sports, health, business, and more on demand 24/7.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Radoz helps you build positive relationships with your people. Radoz helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Radoz clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Radoz and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Radoz client. Find us at RIDEAU.com. Radoz is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Radoz Real Recognition Radio. I'm Roy Saunderson, along with my colleague and friend Max Brown, and our guest today, Dr. Ellen Weber, CEO and President of MITRE International Brain-Based Center for Renewal in Secondary and Higher Education. And, you know, Alan, as I was listening to your discussion and giving us examples of where this new brain science can lead us, I think some of our listeners might be curious to know, okay, so I work on myself. That's understandable. These are some techniques that I can draw upon and enhance my leadership abilities. But how do I... Yeah, an organization is a group of people with a group of brains. So how do I impact all those brains as one person?
That's such an exciting question. Just yesterday, I facilitated and led a mind-guiding opportunity with ASTD to revolutionize meetings using these ideas. And in that, somebody asked that identical question, so it shows me that listeners are, in fact, asking that question. And the truth of the matter is that you probably cannot change an organization that has millions of neuron networks already formed into ruts in one day. And therefore, the best place to start is with a mind guiding. And how mind guiding works is it draws on something in the brain called mirror neurons. And that is a mimicking equipment that you come with physiologically, whether you are aware of it or not. So chill with very ethical people who give thanks to others with genuine reasons, and you will pick up within your brain from the mirror neuron equipment how it is that you can be more thankful, be more ethical, be more genuine to other people. That is an equipment within your brain. So if you are around cynics and your office is 2 minutes away from the cynic all day, you likely have become either hardened to cynicism or put down mechanisms, or you've actually adopted them, which is more likely the case and will be the case over time. So the idea of mind guiding is to fix together one man or woman with the most different two eyeballs in the area, preferably outside of his or her own silo, and to give them a unique and innovative opportunity to create an aha together, which could be a changed practice or a changed and upgraded product for your organization. So it could be the 75-year-old man, a bit of a stretch here because he might not still be on his 2 feet, and a 20-year-old upstart lady from China or from the Inuit culture that I value so highly. And in that mind-guiding exchange, there would be a certain set of opportunities for the young person to give with passion and purpose some new ideas to the table for this possible new outcome. And for the expert or the experienced person, now no longer called an expert but called an experienced person, and maybe a senior scholar is even how we can think of them, their expertise and experience would come into a much more positive or possibility-driven cadre. We don't like the word positive thinking here at MITA because you can say for all day today, you can say the sun is going to set in the east. You can say that and be positive about it, even tip wine over that fact. But it isn't going to set in the east. So we don't like the word positive for the human brain's perspective. We like possibility thinking. And in possibility thinking, new synapses, literally research shows us, leap toward novelty, toward possibilities. And you can gather, we show people as mind guides, mutually mentoring one another, we show them how to gain dopamine in their brain, which allows me to take a risk in front of you and even look a wee bit dumb in front of you two intelligent gentlemen, and that's okay. Because dopamine allows it to be okay. It fuels. I'm a person who works in my working memory a great deal, and in the working memory is the place of risk. You're constantly taking risks. I'm always falling off cliffs, so I'm a bit like the roadrunner. I find myself at the bottom a lot, and I quite like being there because I know how to climb back out with other good people.
So when you're working with those two individuals as a scenario there, is, you know, obviously you have that more positive, engaging young person who is bringing in a whole bunch of new ideas from a lot of stimulus that they've gone through in their life, and you're trying to share that with someone who may, I'm not saying that an older, experienced person is more rut-bound, but they certainly are going to be a more established and perhaps restrained in their thinking.
Default more to their basal ganglia. But can I just interject one small change in your scenario? Is it Roy?
Yes.
Roy, your one small change in your scenario is that young person coming in, I'm terribly sad to tell you, may be just the opposite of the wonderful description you gave him or her. They may come in arrogant. They may come in unwilling to learn, biased, ready to convert the world to their beliefs. And the older person, as you suggest, it might be an amazing Einsteinian mind. So there is the possibility on both sides of these differentials for disaster, that plasticity in the human brain has to be used to make changes for the possibilities and innovations that we want to come out of mind guiding. And
okay.
We will guide that process through a series of tasks opposite to the stress of traditions that keep us all back and opposite to the staid thinking which prevents us from integration. For example, the staid thinking might be as simple as, oh, I have hard skills and I'm not so prone to soft skills. That's all touchy-feely. And I'm an engineer of the nth degree. I have a PhD in engineering or neurosurgery, and I am not given to wasting time. Well, we don't believe that hard skills or soft skills any longer have much place for new era thinking and building together, so we have integrated these into what we call smart skills, which allows the man and woman to use all 8 intelligences to solve real-world problems together, depending on one another for this wider range of intellectual capabilities, so that when I'm really weak in one, there I am paired up with you, who's strong in that one, and learning the skills that can make both mine and yours come to play in a mind-guided setting.
So for that, whether that's a young or older person, as you say, obviously we can all be in ruts. How does one practically get out of our ruts?
A thumbnail sketch of the best way to do it is to do the opposite, and it sounds so trite, but let me tell you why this is a neurodiscovery. We used to think that if I'm stressed, I have to meditate and think, and those are very, very helpful reflective practices in order to think about things that unstress you and move you to another place. More significantly to our work is the actual opposite action. So if you feel stressed, go do every single thing, one logistically at a time, that was mentioned in Roy's blog today on thankfulness. Just do them. Don't think about them. Just do them. First thing, fall on your face getting over to the cubicle next to yours with a cup of coffee. Just give that man who everybody dislikes or that woman who's too chatty or not chatty enough that cup of coffee. And as you act opposite your rut, whatever that is, if you act opposite that rut, your brain literally reconfigures its dendrite brain cell connections. So they actually look different and are configured differently the next day. So that's one example. Stress might be your rut. And so, for example, a stressed person moves and defaults back quicker to ruts and routines. A stressed person defaults back quicker to criticizing and blaming other people. So if you are a stress-filled person, the first thing you want to do is begin to pair yourself up with a happy-go-lucky, silly, fun, loving, intelligent, ethical man or woman somewhere around you at work, and begin to think about doing a project together with that man or woman, a mind-guided project preferably, and you will find the stress begins to fall away from you as you get into the brain's working memory, which is a thimble-sized place in the brain which only has room for new ideas, new facts, new trajectories, new dopamine possibilities from the human brain. And now stress begins to fall away from you. But you see, the place of stress and the place of blaming and the place of cynicism and complaining, that's in the brain's basal ganglia. It's like a great big backpack on your back. You carry it with you everywhere you go. It's there. Right. It's very easy to default back into it. So you hear the same old people doing the same old complaints at meetings or at work, holding everybody back, attacking people who decide to take a TED-like difference and stand up and say in front of TED the things that could be so different. They're the ones who attack you. That's because they live in the place of the brain's basal ganglia.
Gotcha, gotcha. You know, we hear a lot today about employees wanting greater meaning and purpose in the workplace. In our last couple of minutes of this segment, what can leaders do to help facilitate a more purposeful, progress-oriented workplace?
A more purposeful workplace that's progress-oriented is one where serotonin is literally tangible among people. When we started this segment and offline, we introduced ourselves to one another. I counted about 5 serotonin tosses from you to me. You literally reconfigured the possibilities in this hour of between among us together by the fact that you went out of your way because you have a basal ganglia for tossing serotonin. A purposeful workplace comes from one where a great deal of tossing serotonin around happens. Zappos does it through play. Wegmans, which is constantly on top of the list for everybody wants to work there, does it through laughter at work and making meaningful connections among people. That literally and physiologically ups the fuel for learning and progress and innovation, where the dividends go to the individual and to the organization. It's called serotonin building, and it builds more curiosity. The opposite is cortisol building, where we constantly attack other people or diminish them or use our ego to try to make ourselves better than the man or woman next to us, or to dismiss what we don't understand about what they do in ways that bring the caustic cortisol or dangerous stress hormone into the workplace. And that, in a nutshell, is how to move from one toxic workplace to one possibility-driven, fun-to-be-at workplace, the kind that I'm sure you two generate with people around you, because you've done it with me.
So if I understand correctly, this is not just a thinking process. This is very much an action-oriented solution.
Interestingly, until you act and do, the brain will not change. McKinsey came out with a research report quite recently. It said in about 99% of the cases, the great workshops and conversations we had lead to no change in the workplace, and we do not see workplaces moving forward with these brilliant ideas that we all applaud. And the reason, of course, is locked in the brain's equipment. Until you do it, your brain doesn't reconfigure new neuron pathways to do more of it. So we all laugh. We say, wow, what a brilliant speaker. No, that's not where we should be. We should hear ourselves doing one brilliant thing after we are inspired by one another.
That's what I was thinking, and I'm grateful that you brought that out, because you're right. I think sometimes we can talk too much, think too much, and until we get out and do it, nothing's going to change.
No, it cannot change, because the brain's equipment remains the same. Remember, it holds its default back to ruts, traditions, policies that keep others out and only a few in. All of those workplace traditions, mentoring that keeps one person saying to himself or herself, I know it all, and I send out MBA brilliant people who come back in tears and say they won't listen to any of my new ideas. And sometimes it's because they don't have the communication skills. They're still learning them. But in many cases, it's because they're not equipped in their own minds and practicing how it is that a 25-year-old can teach me today like a PhD in his field or her field, because they have a new idea.
Absolutely. And you know, Ellen, we're going to take a quick break here and join on with this conversation in the next half of our show. But to our listeners, join us in a few minutes on Rideau's Real Recognition Radio as we continue our conversation with our guest, Dr. Ellen Weber, and learn more about leading innovation with the brain in mind. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Sonnison and Max Brown.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Sonderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about: getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Sonderson and myself, Max Brown, and of course our guest today, Dr. Ellen Weber, the CEO and President of the MIDA International Brain-Based Center for Renewal in Secondary and Higher Education. And of course, Ellen, as we've been talking about how do we help people understand that we can train our brains to be different, that we can train in terms of possibility instead of just the ruts that you've talked about so well. How do we continue to train someone? Where would the first steps be in getting to think about
possibility? Would you allow me the privilege, if I keep it very brief, of telling a story in response to your exciting question?
Thank you.
The brain part we're going after is plasticity, which is the brain's capability of changing. We thought it was a very young baby who could change, and we therefore try to give our children very good starts in life. All that's good, but let's stop with that and start with the 75-year-old to begin to see the brain's plasticity is amazingly in the 75-year-old alike to a 40-year-old and a 50-year-old and a 30-year-old and can change at any given time through what is called remapping. So if one part of your brain breaks, you cannot change it because it probably has a lesion in it now or some damage that cannot be outdone, but you can remap that capability on another brain part that is quite capable of doing it even more brilliantly than originally done. And I would like to very briefly tell you an exciting story about plasticity that comes out in Dr. Doige's book from a gentleman who was 65 years old, and he was a very brilliant man. He had a stroke. His brain lost all capability to speak or communicate in any way or to move or get around in any way. You can see the inertia that brought into that man's life. He's dependent on somebody else to get him food that they hope he likes, feed it into his body in a way that he doesn't have to move, and he cannot. And he's not ambulatory, so people lifted him and bathed him and did his most basic functions. They treated him as they do all stroke patients in New York, and then they sent him off after 1 month saying, the hospitals are busy, you need to go to a rehabilitation center because we've done all we can for you. He's still completely dysfunctional, cannot speak, cannot move, but he's moved into this place. His sons came up from Mexico and said, but that's our papa. And they said, yes, and we are experts all over the world. We have understood plasticity. And this young man said, I don't think you have understood plasticity. And they said, oh, but we have this doctor and this doctor, we do. We're neurotypes. And nothing against neurotypes. They're wonderful. We're so grateful for them. But they didn't understand plasticity. And so the son went back to Mexico and he said, but that's my papa. They took him out of this home, brought him back to Mexico and said, we can help him to remap, even though he's 65, what he lost. And they started him crawling on the floor, knowing that a baby does not walk till he crawls or she crawls. And this man was hopelessly falling, and they propped him up against the wall, and they could see that he was egging them on as an older father, and just to get the attention and egging them on. So they had little games, and then they decided, we'll move him outside, and everybody criticized them. That neuro field said, you're stupid, you don't get it, we're trying to tell you what is so in the medical field. The neighbors in Mexico said, you treat your father worse than we treat our dogs. You have him on the front lawn, embarrassing him, moving him around, he's falling down, he's... And so the men were, the two young sons were absolutely degraded from the entire established traditional communities. Within 3 years, long story short, this man, at now 68, not only spoke again and walked again, but delivered himself to one of the top universities in New York City and then again became a professor in his field. That is the story of plasticity. Now, his name is Baki Rita. His son went on to become the father of plasticity. His name's Paul Baki Rita. And the son became the father of plasticity in neuroscience with these amazing insights about how it is that the brain can change itself, not by talking about, thinking about, or laughing about, or listening to lectures, but by doing the opposite of what you're struggling with.
My goodness. I'm trying to think in context of back at the workplace. We have a lot of leaders who are saying, you know, Ellen, this is all well and good, but much like your neuro doctor's examples just a moment ago, and I'm, again, not taking away from their expertise or what they know, but we have a lot of people at work that are pretty comfortable with where they're at, think they know what it's all about, and that there's no need for them to consider this because, well, that's just a bunch of, you know, the woo-woo stuff, or the, you know, it's just kind of, it's just too far out there for people. How do you suggest to someone who might be listening today, who feels like they have a leader who could really benefit from understanding how serotonin plays a role, how gratitude and this possibility, these words of possibility, could help in their workplace? Where would they go? How would they start a conversation to create?
Like to think of a tangible and scalable takeaway that will benefit the people and the organization to start where you're starting, because you have defined today's modern workplace. It is not the workplace for a new era. era, nor is it doing new era thinking. But there are exceptions, such as Zappos and Wegmans and places like yours that are making that exception. We like to start with a very concrete task for what you're asking for. We call it a celebration of innovation. We put people in mind-guided pairs. They could be two, they could be three. And we show them how to rely on the brain's working memory for innovation. We even run our MBA courses. I, along with Dr. Rob McMaster, designed a course called Innovation, Leading Innovation with the Brain in Mind. And in that, we run through this celebration. Instead of a final exam, which is a traditional way to check whether I'm doing a good job, and it's like an evaluation in the workplace. Most of them are not intelligence fair. That's another topic for another day. But in a mind-guided setting, you will judge my performance not by my efforts, not by what I did, but what my outcome was, how authentic it was, and how usable in this organization it was, and how much people enjoyed putting it together with me as a collaborator. And in that setting, we call a celebration of innovation, where two or three people work together, preferably across silos, to improve one small practice. Maybe one copy machine is not working well enough at your institution, then that would be the upgrade product. Maybe your marketing department is simply not coming up with the ideas that GM is coming up with. That then is your starting point. What one innovative idea do we have to start with today for a celebration of innovation? We work together with those mind guides over about 2, 3, 4 months, and then each of those mind guides invites 5 people like yourself or like myself from the outside community who might be interested in their innovative possibilities. They invite them to a conference called a celebration of innovation. In that conference, you might think that death by PowerPoint would be the thing that goes on, but it doesn't, because that's not mind guiding. That's the old expert idea where I'm the sage on the stage. But we avoid that, and we have the mind guide to the side. A guide to the side engages the guests that they invite into this celebration of innovation. And in that two-hour engagement, we come up with new ideas to add to the already formed ideas for a product or a process or a new marketing system or some. It can be so minusculely small that it could end up being the brilliance of the invention of a paperclip. Remember, that started small. Other people started in their garages and end up with Microsoft. It could start small, but it builds on the brain power and the 8 distinctive intelligences of every man and woman in the room, because we all come to the table with at least 8 intelligences to engage, of which most of them get wasted in the transaction. So that's how we do. We start with a celebration of innovation. We put mind guides together. We teach them how serotonin works, how dopamine is raised, how you gain oxytocin in the brain by trusting one another. Even singing together can get you the kind of oxytocin which increases trust in the workplace. The one thing that polls say is most missing and most craved in today's workplaces. And we also show people how to avoid the cortisol that comes from the man or woman who uses meta messages. For example, if you looked at the debate the other night, and I'm very non-political, I stand in the middle and vote for the man or woman who does most brain-powered things, mostly, to help to build the kind of well-being into workplaces and in the world that I see the need for. But I saw in the debate the other night the sad thing about meta messages. I hate to have to tell you, respectful project, you know, person, but I disagree with everything you said because it's stupid. You know, that's a meta message. If I want to say to somebody, could you rethink what you've just said, I would have you considered, or would you reconsider, or have you thought about, or thank you for the one idea that you gave, and I was wondering if you've considered this other possibility that could also help it. It's very different.
Well, and so now you're right into an alley where I wanted to ask you, and that is, what role does gratitude and service to others play in our well-being?
It's standing at the helm of the brain that's brilliant. It's leading the Einsteinian walk into the future. But it's fraught with many things that people don't think about unless they are willing to unpack some some of the brain's equipment and take a look at what it really does. For example, if you don't unpack mentoring, you'll think it's something very noble without considering it. If you don't unpack the word debate, you will think it's okay to attack your opponent because that's obviously the only way you can win for your party. Oh, no, it isn't. It only is if you don't know your brain's equipment to affirm that man or woman and then to begin to show Einsteinian thoughts on the other side of his or her idea without meta-messages. So if you understand how to unpack the brain's equipment, you can lead with a genuine thankfulness, a genuine affirmation, a genuine humility that says, I will honestly tell you, Ron and Max, that you probably are much more brilliant than I will ever be in several areas we've discussed today. That's why I want to hang around with your kind and learn from you, and I honor the fact that you allowed me an open space, a delightful open segue to give my two bits that I have sacrificed 30 years of a call to make happen. That's what I'm asking for in the workplace, is what you have given me today. It's the model of what you have given me today and what you've generated back from me by so giving me.
Well, I'm enjoying your generosity in spades, let me tell you. But I think one of the things I've learned as well, and I want to do this before we go to this quick break we have to take, but one of the things I'm appreciating, and it's something I've tried to reflect and share with audiences myself, which is that recognition means to see it, to see and know again. But what you're helping me understand is that to see and know again, when we appreciate someone, we're rewiring the brain with that plasticity you're talking about, so that tomorrow, if I rewire with optimism and happiness and more positive today, as you were suggesting with this possibility of today, I'm rewired tomorrow more geared towards looking for that again. Is that correct?
You are absolutely correct, and there's even another piece to that that I think is equally as exciting, Roy. It's the whole notion of your thankfulness connected or linked to a man or woman who comes to work with this equipment in his or her amygdala. The amygdala is your seat of emotions. It's the place where you store your retorts, your, so you think I'm fat. Well, I'll put you down. It's that place that flares up very quickly. Thankfulness touches the amygdala in ways that tame another person's amygdala. So I always suggest that if somebody attacks you, get on the side of the attack and laugh it off. Somebody calls your feet too big or your ears sticking out. See, you know what? They probably do. And that's what makes me the fun cartoon character that I am. Kind of attitude. And by doing self-deprecating humor to get back, the amygdala is now quieted again in the other person. But what debates tend to do, and I used to be a debate expert. I had a group of 10 turn into a group of 40,000, and I wrote the text for teaching people how to debate. So I'm not foreign to debate. It's just that it has done some terribly wrong things to get all of us forward in innovative and brilliant ways. So the brain really is energized. And the opposite is your thankfulness with genuineness that can say to a person's amygdala, you're saying quietly, I can tame you by simply not taking your retort to heart for 2 minutes until you quiet it down and not throwing another dart at your amygdala. So I'm going to get a cannon shot back, even if I don't get it today, because maybe that person's not smart enough to think of that barb today. It'll come out in New York Times column. I'm going to suggest to you that we have rewired an entire nation for barbs, debates that are working against the human brain, and innovation dosing, like a fireman puts out a fire person puts out a fire on your house, and the fire could be brilliant innovation. And that's what we have rewired our nation for by accepting traditions without unpacking them like we're doing today.
Well, I appreciate this conversation. We do have to take a break, but when we come back, we will take just the last segment to give you some opportunity to share maybe some pieces that you've learned or some summaries on where this is all headed, and just get some final ideas on where we should be going with this. We're really grateful you're here with us today, Ellen. And for Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, we're grateful for all our listeners. This is Max Brown and my colleague and, of course, friend Roy Saunderson reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Find out what's happening on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Find out about new shows, featured guests, and what's up this week. Find us on Facebook by searching keyword Voice America.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Rideau offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio. When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about, getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Thanks for coming back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. And we're going to finish off our conversation today with Dr. Ellen Weber, our guest, and learn some final pointers on lead innovation with the brain in mind. And we've just got a few minutes left here, Ellen, and I wondered, you know, with our focus, as you know, on leadership and trying to motivate people, I wonder what steps you would suggest leaders take on wanting to motivate their people to do better work.
I guess that's an excellent question. Thank you so much, Roy. I think that the place that I would start is to engage more brain power, knowing that everybody comes with amazing intelligence that is not fixed but is growing daily based on what people do. I would say, for example, in a circle, there might be one very talkative gentleman and one very quiet gentleman or woman, and that goes on every day, and that becomes the tradition of the culture that pulls everybody back. I would suggest that for novelty to happen, which the brain leads to, that you do something different in that very problem setting. And typically what we do is we diminish the man or the woman who's too talkative. That puts cortisol in the brain of that human and everybody else in the workplace that was present, and probably will lead to horrid repercussions. My suggestion is, using a brain-based mechanism or tool, take a talking stick. An interesting, I sometimes take a little clown that was given to me in the Arctic because of all the laughing we did, or I take a ceramic brain I have and pass it around as a talking stick. The Inuit taught me to do this, and say to everybody in the circle, if you want to think more about this controversial topic, just pass the stick to the next person and we'll make sure it gets back to you. But unless you're holding the talking stick, don't speak. Just listen and decide what you're going to add to what's already been said. And that kind of a very small changed practice can move the non-speakers into articulated brain power in your workplace without diminishing that wonderful verbal man or woman who just likes to think out loud while they talk. And so without diminishing the one, raising up and all accessing the brain power of another is one great way to start moving in a new direction using these practices. Another, of course, is to join social media networks, to look for new trends and new novelty and that would rejuvenate your workplace, and then help others to learn how to access Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, and maybe set up one website where people can toss their ideas every time they think of a problem. They have to name the problem and not allowed to leave that screen until they propose at least one solution. So those kinds of possibility thinkers are the ways to move from the traditions that we have not unpacked, so we've let them take us into crippling places, into unpacking novelty in new ways that make that trajectory forward into a more innovative workplace.
Wonderful. Ellen, we're getting to a short close now, and I want to make sure our listeners know where to locate you and find you. What would be some ways in which they could reach out?
Well, my name, Weber, has only one B, so MITA is the approach, M-I-T-A, so MITA Weber, anywhere Googled, it comes up in many countries. I work all over the world. I have written books, they're on Amazon, on these topics that give dozens of practical ways to use brain-powered ideas from MITA, but I think the place to find me most readily writing daily is brainleadersandlearners.com, all spelled out, BRAINLEADERSANDLEARNERS.com. So brainleadersandlearners.com is my blog, which I used to get to daily, and now I'm lucky if I get there once a week, but I'm there often, and that's a good place to find out what's new and how you can offer changes to us and how we can help you or work together to cross-pollinate some of this brain power across some of these rutted silos that are frustrating so many of us.
Absolutely. If you had like one final piece of advice that you would give to our audience on truly, as you kind of say, leading and learning with the use of the brain, what advice would you give?
I would like to say something a little bit different, but it comes from certainly the work and research and traveling in leadership that I've done, is stretch your working memory. Probably nobody's ever told you to stretch your working memory. It isn't like stretching a pant size, by the way, but what it is very similar to stretching a pant size in that do something so different today that you did not access that basal ganglia backpack full of habits, routines, and ruts. Get in, be uncomfortable in there, grab some dopamine and run like hell. How about that?
I love it.
Get in that working memory with somebody who's way smarter than you, which in my case is not hard to find. And then do one small thing that's different, and you will stretch your working memory and stretch that plasticity for change to happen, but more importantly, to lead change, because the rest of us need your ideas and your unique intelligence, vast array of intelligences, to help us get also to a more innovative place, to build the kind of communities that Roy, you and Max build so beautifully. That's what I would suggest. Stretch your working memory by designing one small difference today and do it with somebody smarter than you. And probably
Wonderful. It
will use a unique intelligence that maybe you don't use so much, and you'll have a unique thing to celebrate.
Great. Well, Ellen, we've come to the end of our show, but we'd love to thank you for being with us today and sharing your knowledge and expertise.
Thank you so much for having me, and I hope that this ends up in many new innovations for our communities.
Well, thank you, Ellen.
Well, thank you to our listeners, too, for joining us today, and Max and I will continue our discussion on how to build relationships and inspire greatness and create workplaces where people can thrive. We certainly welcome and encourage your comments and suggestions and invite you to go to rideau.com/radio. That's rideau.com/radio to give us your feedback and tell us why you listen to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We certainly look forward to hearing from you. Also, check us out and more of our shows at Rideau's Real Recognition Radio Library at rideau.com. Thanks for listening. For more information about our Recognition Management Institute, visit us at rideau.com. Until next time, I'm Roy Sonnison and Max Brown, reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Sonnison and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.